Okay, thank you for this institute and the organizers for giving me this opportunity to talk about comparative genomics and duplication, co-evolution of duplicate. So there are three keywords. So if you compare many genomic sequences, there are lots of information, especially when for studies of duplication. And duplicated gene likely undergo concerted evolution. That's the co-evolution of duplicated copies. So, and to identify that kind of co-evolution, comparing genomic sequences from relative species are really powerful. So I'd like to demonstrate it first. Okay, as an introduction, so the genome is a genetic material and goes through parents to offspring. And every species has different genome because they change it over a long time period. So how does genome change? So here it's a cell and nucleus inside, and there are some chromosomes. And each chromosome is a DNA, and there are lots of coding genes on it. So one of the changes is inversion. So here genes A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, and these three genes are just flipped here. So A, B, C, and B, E, F, G, H, I. This is called inversion. And also, one could lose sometimes, or it's deletion or duplication. This is what I'm interested in. So now this gene D is duplicated. So you see two tandemly duplicated D genes here. And also, DNA consists of many nucleotides, which is represented by four characters, A, T, Z, C. And this nucleotide changes too. This is a minimum change of genome. Probably the most drastic change is the genome duplication. The whole genome is duplicated. This is a flower, it's kind of one of the national flowers in Japan. And this is a minimum set of genome. So haploid size is, chromosome number is 9. So this is a diploid. So this flower has 18 chromosomes. And the double of this looks like this. Looks quite normal. And this is tetraploid, or hexaploid. And still looks nice, but these two species, which has chromosomes number 72 or 90, they don't look like a regular flower, but still they are alive in natural populations. They just double the whole chromosome. You don't see this patterns, or so, and probably there, you know, I don't know, it's still fine. not as good as, you know.
Is that the only change, that it's just doubled? And
yeah, that's right. That's the same set of the genome.
So this is a fusion, and this is not a different species that
converged
at some point.
Yes, I don't know. It depends on the definition of species. So,
but it didn't diverge. So this just can happen. I mean, all the time, starting from this D japonic.
Oh,
you just double the genome, and then,
Yeah, that's right.
Divergence time between.
It should be almost zero, right? But they have different names.
Okay.
So let's see what happens to duplicate. You know, once duplicated gene is fixed in the population, then what happens? So the direct outcome is the doubling of the gene product. So the dosage goes twice larger. Then usually this would be deleterious, so or even neutral, or then the terminal fate would be the most likely fate would be, you know, deletion of one copy.
It may not necessarily double the dosage because genes may have a feedback mechanism. Mm-hmm. Which can regulate the amount of...
Oh, yes. Yeah, I agree. So, ideally, at most, it could double. But sometimes higher dosage is preferred. In that case, probably selection try to keep both for some long time. This is another fate called neofunctionalization. So, one of the duplicates got a new advantageous mutation to become a new gene. And some other phase includes, this is a story Austin Hughes proposed and talked yesterday. A bifunctional gene duplicate, then they specialize the each function. And that kind of specialization occurs and by the change of regulatory element too. Okay, this is a model called proposed by Foss and Winch. So duplication of a gene with multiple regulatory elements, then silencing different elements in descendant duplicated gene is one of the permanent fate of duplicate. So,
sorry, are you talking about an actual deletion of the gene? How
So silencing,
right.
Yes. So this one lose this purple element, and this one lose this green element.
Right. I guess in your
genomic
application
of genes,
then you will have many of these silencing.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, actually in East, they double the whole genome about 100 or 200 million years ago. And now only 10% of them have two duplicates. So for 90% of them, they lost one copy. So okay, in summary, genome changes at various levels. And we are interested in here gene duplication. And to determine the fate of gene duplication, in addition to regular population genetic factors like drift or mutations, natural selection is one of the important factors. So question is first, so how often gene duplication occurs? Then from this one, the question is how natural selection works on duplicated genes with together with other mechanisms like a mutation and gene conversion. I'd like to address these two questions in my talk. So I use yeast genome as a model. So it looks like this, and each individual looks like a fruit or something. And you can buy this like $5.99 or so online. It's cute.
What is that?
Oh, it's just single cell of yeast.
Okay.
And yeah, yeast are everywhere in our food, like bread, beer, wine, and any kind of alcohol. So the top one, Saccharomyces cerevisiae, this is a yeast we use for bread. And lots of sister species have sequenced, the genome is sequenced. So now we can compare those of them. And here's a summary statistic of yeast genome. The genome size is around 12 megabase. There are 5 to 6,000 genes. And yeast genome is the first genome sequenced in eukaryote in 1996. And now more than 10 relatives are sequenced. So, okay, here I want to show how good to have genomic sequences rather than not just doing regular local DNA analysis. So if we don't have any genomic sequences, then this is a common way to do evolutionary analysis. So from a species A, you can amplify a specific DNA fragment from the genome called PCR. Then, okay, you do the same thing to another species. So PCR amplifies a specific part of the genome. Then you can put it in an evolutionary analysis. So if species A is human and B is orangutan, then if you compare the two sequences, orthologous sequence from human and orangutan, then regularly the divergence, the nucleotide difference is about 3%. So three nucleotides are different in 100 base pair on average. Then given the mutation rate per year per nucleotide site is 10 to minus 9, then we can estimate the time to their common ancestor to be like 14 million years ago. So this means the divergence tells the time. I mean, so that this process is kind of like a clock. So it's called molecular clock. However, this PCR doesn't work perfectly. I mean, sometimes they do mistake. So you are supposed to amplify the same part of the genome, but sometimes PCR misamplify another place. Then if you do the same analysis, you get messy result. So this happens when gene relocate or they have a paradox, gene duplication occurred in the genome. So there are many similar parts in the genome. So this is a case due to gene duplication. Suppose duplication occurred 25 million years ago. Then speciation occurred. So if you look at this red one and this purple one, then you can get the result I showed before. And the divergence should be around 3%. So you can get the right result. But if PCR misamplifies this blue one, then you get more divergence. So the divergence goes to this duplication event. So you are looking at the distance, time to duplication. So it should be like 5%. Suppose the divergence is 5%, then we might overestimate the time to speciation. Then if you have whole genomic sequence, we don't have this kind of confusion anymore. Because just get the DNA from the genome, the right part, then compare it. Then no mistakes. So this is one of the advantage of having genomic sequence.
No mistakes, because you can actually distinguish all the
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. almost, not 100%, but yeah, there are lots of very confusing cases like tandem duplication in a short region or
the loss of the power.
Yeah, that's right, that's right. But still, you know, if you look at the synteny of the in the surrounding region, then with really high possibility, you can identify orthologs. So in 2000, Lynch and Connery estimate the gene duplication rate is very high, 88.3 duplication per gene per billion year. This rate was almost on the same order of point mutation, and everybody was surprised. But and my intuition was this is too high. Then look at what they did. So they looked at the whole genome of the yeast and counted the number of young duplicated genes. So problem is this young. So what if they cheated their age? Then we might overestimate gene duplication rate. So the definition of young is here. Obviously, genes duplicated very recently. It's a young duplication. And all duplication means duplicate for a long time ago. However, we don't know the real age. We have to estimate. And they estimated the age due to the divergence between duplicates. And if the duplicated gene, the divergence in duplicated gene follows the molecular clock, then that should be okay. So, however, there is some reasons that we don't believe this. So the question is, this looking young, that means duplicates with low divergence is really young or maybe old? So, let me rephrase the method. So they did, they didn't count young duplicated genes. They counted looking young duplicated genes. That's the problem. So after gene duplication, they accumulate mutations. And so the sequences of duplicates get diverged. However, it might not follow a molecular clock type divergence because they might co-evolve. It's called concerted evolution. So first, let's suppose duplicated gene accumulate mutations independently. Then the whole picture is easy. Gene duplication creates identical sequences in the genome. So the divergence is zero at T0. Then as time goes, the divergence increases. Right now, here there are five differences, and now 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6, so divergence is 11, and 16, and it goes almost linearly. In this case, molecular clock works. However, a phenomenon called concerted evolution violates that assumption. So no molecular clock anymore. So let's see how it happens. So gene conversion is kind of copy and paste event from one gene to the other. It happens between paralogs. So here at T1, the divergence is right now 5. But conversion event copies this part of gene and paste it here. Then now this pasting event erases this green mutation and put this red mutation here. So this single event decreases the divergence by 2. So now the divergence is 3. So as this process goes on, then the divergence will be stuck around an equilibrium value. So this case, molecular clock doesn't work. Very old duplicate gene looks as if they are young. So to see how often gene conversion is going on in each duplicate, we use the data from this one, Baker's yeast, and several relatives. So what we did was simple. First, identify duplicated gene represented by X and Y here, and they also we check the we use adjacent genes as markers to identify the orthologs in other relative species. So if you got a blast hit in other species, and also the marker genes are there. So this synteny is conserved in other species. Then we thought, we considered that this duplicate gene exists in this genome too. Then, okay, let's look at the first species. Then, if the duplicate gene both present in this species, then we see that the duplication occurred before this speciation event. Okay, then going down, and if there's the two genes exist also in this species, then the minimum age of duplication is here. That means duplication event must be older than this speciation time. So based on this, it doesn't matter. Just carefully, if you carefully looked at the synteny region, you can do. Actually, it's hard to do that for tandem duplication. So let's suppose it duplicate to other place.
In both locations.
Yeah.
So you are looking at synteny in both locations.
Yeah, that's right.
Then look at what
it happens before. Yeah. Then we got an estimate of minimum ages of duplicate. And also we got divergence between duplicates. And if you compare, there are big inconsistencies. That mean, and also, so like here, we got minimum age 4. That means the duplication should be older than here. But you still see almost identical sequence between duplicates. That's one of the striking differences. And there are lots of cases like that.
Constructed by looking at the entire genome.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
We assume that gene conversion will contribute little to the clock of the overall genome.
So we use a single copy gene, therefore no gene conversion. So to construct this tree, we didn't use duplicate.
So you have one clock that you trust. And
yeah, that's right.
For another one which you less
yeah,
trust.
That's right.
The phylogeny is known. The phylogeny is known.
the word known means that you use some sort of clock. And we, since we are questioning clock,
no, not necessary. You can construct biology without assuming clock. There are many methods which you don't have to assume clock to construct biology.
But you actually use the clock.
Yes, sure. I mean, this tree should be believable, right? At least for this model species.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, you can make estimate the branch lengths, yeah, from single copy genes.
That's what we have, that you can distrust.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't trust anything 100% in biology. So. Okay. Then we found that only 1 to 5 gene pairs with minimum age T0. That means the duplication occurred on the external lineage to Baker's yeast. And that translates to this rate, 0.01 to 0.06 per billion years, which is about 1% of molecular clock-based estimate of Lynch Connery. So that means, okay, so molecular clock doesn't work because so many old duplicated genes look as if they are young, probably by gene conversion.
So how does that translate now in the fraction of duplicated pairs where gene conversion takes place?
So, okay, let's go back.
I'm able to read that from these data, but I don't.
So we found only 1 to 5 gene duplication in this time.
Okay.
Then you see, okay, this time interval is so the divergence between, I mean, the nucleotide substitution rate. You know, we know some estimate for that.
Mm-hmm.
It's time maybe 10 to minus 9 or 10.
Yeah.
Then you can, you know, from the ratio of nucleotide substitutions to duplication, you can somewhat estimate the duplication rate.
Yeah, of course, but I'm just asking for the probability that if you, I mean, when these branches have a duplication,
mm-hmm,
on the common ancestor, so how, what's the likelihood that actually gene conversion between the pair of genes is happening?
It depends on the position or so many factors.
Rough estimate, like it happens in 50% of all cases.
Oh, immediately after duplication, I think conversion occurs very frequently, and gradually it decreases with many factors like accumulation of mutations. So I will show some models later. So
main effect of this age cheating,
mm-hmm,
blame on gene conversion,
mm-hmm,
or is there also like other selection effects?
Yeah, as Wenxian talked yesterday, yeah, conservation, purifying selection is one of the factors too.
Okay, but
why did Lynch and Connor speak about
what the other work that we cited, Lynch and Connery?
Yeah.
Could they get it so wrong? I mean, if they falsely attributed the duplicates to the outer branches,
mm-hmm,
they should have been lacking further up the tree. In other words, there's a certain number of duplicates.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, where do you put them?
Oh, they didn't do this analysis. Oh, okay.
There was only one species available.
Yeah.
So
they had just
one species available, and they didn't construct any biology. They just estimate the divergence by the degree of sequence divergence.
Okay.
Yeah, after that study, lots of species are sequenced.
Okay. So here in your study, mm-hmm, then if you estimate like what evolutionary time interval, how many duplications occurred,
mm-hmm,
find something roughly constant.
No, because actually after this work, they sequenced much older species, and they found species around here experience whole genome duplications. So we checked the old list of the duplication we use, and most of them are from the whole genome duplication, which occurred around this time. Still, they are looking young.
Excuse me? Yeah. I think there is another group of mutant funneries where they also, so I haven't read the paper carefully, but they mentioned the duplication rate in vertebrates are, I think, entirely varied somehow. Mm. Actually, also, really, that's kind of about the same order of magnitude, like base duplication rate.
I don't know, it depends on species, you know. Yeast is kind of a model species of gene conversion, so maybe gene conversion rich species.
Yeah, and I'm wondering if that suffers the same difficulty, the same problem.
Yeah, sure, but yeah, it depends on
the might have had like more species to look at.
Yeah, that's right, that's right.
In that case, that's, and it would be, I don't know, but it would be surprising that it differs by so many orders of magnitude.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree, yeah. So we have to wait for other, you know, like human chimp orangutan or that kind of, you know, good model to apply this method to see how it's going in higher eukaryotes.
You have enough species already.
The current knowledge is that inconversion occurs probably more often in bees than in vertebrates.
Yeah, right. This is why I find it strange.
Yeah, and also that. This kind of micro, they have a stronger codon usage.
Yeah.
So they have to retard the rate of diversity. So the situation would not be so bad in vertebrates. Or in bacteria.
Yeah.
It could be bad.
So I'm just a little confused about these numbers. So can you go back to the rate statement?
Yeah, so I
guess I'm just wondering, even if these rates are roughly quarter of magnitude reasonable, like, you know, a billion years,
mm-hmm.
where do all these genes come from? I mean...
Oh, you... what kind of genes?
The question comes, if there are 6,000 genes, how many per genome will there be after 100 million years? How many duplicates?
I don't know.
How you can
calculate
that?
You know,
it would be like, say, for 100 million years, it will be, let's say, that it's 0.03, so it will be 3 in 1,000. And there are 6,000 genes, so there will be 18 genes.
I don't think so. They could rule, you know, silencing is also another thing going on. So once they fixed in a population, then new mutations silence the duplicates. So it goes up and down, and it could be in a stable...
About the growth. After the whole genome duplication, there was a very quick loss of genes. And then after that, it stabilized. So there are very few in the past, like say 100 million years, there were very few loss of genes. So these different genes are, he has a phylogeny, these different genes are usually found in all the species.
So this is the rate per gene?
Yeah, per gene.
So I guess I'm just worried, like, I mean, every gene in yeast has some biological
effect. Yeah.
And I assume they're generally somewhat related to one another. If you go, most of the genes are related to one another if you go far enough.
Yeah, that's right.
So, and there haven't been that many billion years.
It should be a...
So, I guess at the point, at what point does this number break down?
Because I don't...
If you go back far enough, they have to be created at that.
Yeah.
Does this number include whole genome duplication events as well, or is it separate from that?
Separate from whole genome duplication. And for extremely long time, I don't know. Yeah, it's a kind of increasing function because the original species
was... It seems like it's got to be a really increasing function.
But don't take this value because still, you know, they could be lost in several million years or so. So
this was after the whole genome. Mm-hmm. Right? So this was already a well-working gene. Mm-hmm. In the whole interval of your analysis. Right? So I guess.
So has this just been comfortable with its number of genes for the last 20 years? It doesn't really want any
more. So it depends on how long time you are talking about. You know, for several million years ago, sure, it should be stable. In, I don't know, billion years or... Then you don't know what's going on in on the Earth. So lots of changes in the environment. So there could be big, you know, yeah.
But you have just a small number for this analysis, right? Like mm-hmm. A small number, the synteny is conserved.
Yeah.
And that can be, I mean, if you just have, how many will it be? Like five genes or five gene pairs? I was wondering if maybe, I was wondering about the uncertainty of these of this rate. Maybe it's like, because of the small number of your experimental data.
Oh, yeah, in experimental data. So yeah, actually this rate is not the rate of duplication. The rate of duplication times the rate of fixation. So if you do experiment, you might see more duplications, but it may not fix in the population.
Yeah, right.
Okay, so the 100 people from Japan, they are wearing T-shirts with their age. And they look at just at with the, you know, they can't teach a lot with
some
the
age.
You think so? But you cannot look like a baby or so. Yeah, maybe you can teach like 10 years or so, but cannot. Yeah, like people around here cannot be like a baby. But that's what East genes are doing.
So. You make it up to us well.
Okay, so let me summarize this part. So we got an estimate, a molecular clock free estimate of and duplication rate, and this in this analysis, comparative genomics worked a lot well. Okay, let's go back to this topic, evolutionary fate of gene duplicate genes. So after duplication, so this is a very attractive fate. One of genes successfully acquired a new function and evolved a new gene. However, conversion is very bad in this situation. It could erase this very nice mutation and return to the original state. Or conversion the other way might erase the original function. So this homogenization event works against this evolution of a new function. So under what conditions does this neofunctionalization occurs? This is the next question. So to address this question, it's good to look at the polymorphism data in duplicated genes. So here's one of the polymorphism data from duplicated genes in amylase gene in Drosophila. So there are two genes, proximal amylase and distal amylase, on the first chromosome of Drosophila. So there are 9 individuals. Each of them have 2 duplicates. So this is individual 1 of these genes, and this is individual 1 and second gene. And if you make an alignment all together, then you see lots of polymorphic sites shared by the 2 genes. Look at the yellow one. So here, C and Z are polymorphic in proximal genes. And also, this CZ polymorphism is observed in distal genes. So unless there are lots of multiple mutations, this shared polymorphism could be a strong evidence for gene conversion. So again, this is an illustration of polymorphism in duplicated genes. So polymorphic sites are classified into three categories. One is shared site. So polymorphism is observed in gene 1 and also in gene 2. This is represented by yellow line. And this blue one, specific polymorphism is seen only, polymorphism is observed only in one gene. Here, the first site is specific to gene 2 because polymorphism is only here. So in only in gene 2, but this is gene 1 is monomorphic. And the third class is fixed site. Here, red mutation is fixed in gene 1, but you don't see any in gene 2. This is fixed site. Then for each polymorphic site, you can measure the variation in this way. So this HW1 is heterogeneity within locus 1, which is 0 because it's monomorphic. Then within 2 is 0.33. This is a level of, it's kind of a heterozygosity per site. And HB is heterogeneity between two loci, which is a probability that if you pick one sequence from gene 1 and one sequence from gene 2, then the probability that they are different is 0.2. And the last one, D, is linkage disequilibrium. So you can compute these four quantities for each polymorphic site and make summation. Then this KW1 is average pairwise nucleotide differences within gene 1, and KW2 is within gene 2, and KB is average differences between two genes. And the last one is the summation of linkage disequilibrium. So what I did was to get the expectations of these four quantities given by a function of mutation rate, gene conversion rate, and recombination rate between two genes. So to do so, okay, let's consider duplicate genes with L nucleotide. So there are L nucleotides. That means there are, okay, if you divide into pieces, like to only look at the first site, then here you can handle this situation in a two locus model. So this whole gene can be considered there are L two locus models. So let's look at only one site. Then okay, there are two possible alleles, large A and small a. So each chromosome has two loci. So AA means, so there are four haplotypes, large A, large A, large A, small A, large A, and small. So there symmetrical mutation occurs between two alleles at rate mu per site. And theta represents the four times population size times mu. And recombination occurs at rate R between two genes. And the large R is four times N times recombination rate. And gene conversion occurs at rate C. So at this rate, large A, small a, on this chromosome, if large A is copied to small a, then it changes to large. This happens at rate C. And conversion the other way also occurs at rate C, and which makes small haplotype. And this model, okay, let's skip this ugly derivation thing. So using the diffusion equations, okay, we got expectation of heterozygosity within and between and linkage disequilibrium. Then going back to this figure, and there are L two locus models, so the expectation of average number of pairwise differences within and between them are just summation of heterogeneity in each side, so just times L will be fine. Then L is reasonably large, then we can make this approximation. Then the final equations are quite simple. And also, from the four quantities we observed from data, we can estimate the mutation rate and the conversion rate and the recombination rate. Between two loci. Doesn't matter, because if you put set recombination rate to be like infinity, then the situation is identical to the case of, you know, two genes located on different chromosomes. So they applied to the data I showed before. Then we estimate mutation rate and conversion rate and recombination rate. So conversion rate is about 50 times higher than mutation rate.
So this is for
neutral evolution. That's right. So no selection and conversion is going on frequently, and just shuffle the variance between two duplicates. Then I'd like to show a second data set, which looks quite different from the first one. Here, yellow part, there are some shared. This is the data from human recess genes called RHCE and RHD. It's kind of blood type gene. Then here you see a cluster of fixed site. And if you look at the position, this cluster is only in a short, very short region, in like 100th base pair. So let's look at the spatial distribution of the two kinds of. So no polymorphism within.
These are the same. But what about the other part? Are we found and make them wrong? What are these things? There are two paralogs, right?
Yes, two paralogs.
So no polymorphism, almost no polymorphism in the other paralog?
Okay, I just picked up only polymorphic sites.
Yes. Then from the RHD paralog.
The yes.
In the purple region?
Yeah, sure.
There are no polymorphisms
here? No. No polymorphism here. It's just 100 base pair. There's so many fixed sites. Pattern is totally different in the first half of the region and in the second half. So from here, from exons 1 to 5, there are almost, you know, shared polymorphic sites everywhere. And in the second region, especially in this exon 7, there are a lot of fixed size. So the difference of this pattern is very significant. So what's going on? Then I hypothesize that selection against gene conversion around exon 7 might explain the data. Then why? So here, suppose there are a new advantageous mutation is fixed in either of the duplicates in exon 7. Then gene conversion occurs, which is deleterious because it erases this good function or original function. So that means, okay, go back to two locus model. Now we have two alleles, A and B. They have some slightly different functions, and advantageous haplotype is those with two different functions, and haplotypes with the same ones are deleterious. Then conversion makes these deleterious types. Then selection, if selection works to disfavor these, you know, AA and BB, then this selection might explain that RH polymorphism data. Okay, so again, let me skip diffusions. And so this is the final. So we got, again, we got the expectation of heterozygosity within and between loci. So these equations mean that if selection is sufficiently strong, stronger than conversion rate, then the target site of selection will be fixed. So that means A, large A, large B haplotypes, or B and A haplotypes are almost fixed in population. That was a good one. And continuously, conversion makes AA and BB, but they are eliminated from population immediately. And if selection stably maintains AB haplotype, say, then additional mutation peaks in each duplicated gene. So that makes a peak of divergence between two duplicates. Then there are a couple of reasons that we believe selection, strong selection is going on here. So first, all 15 fixed sites are in exon 7. And this exon 7 encodes a really important part of the gene, which characterizes the antigen differences between two genes. And among out of 15 fixed sites, 13 are non-synonymous, that change the amino acid, only two synonymous differences. So that's a strong evidence for adaptive selection.
Excuse me. Mm-hmm. You say something that how many of these sites are responding to selection? So you could think that there's only one that feeds true and then it fixes all the other ones.
I would say only at least one. Yeah, but
I would say that all these other non-synonymous ones might be quite true as well.
Yeah, sure. You know, additional advantageous mutation might be involved or might be just neutral.
Yeah.
So I don't know, I have no idea.
So can you tell about the time of the duplication?
Oh, okay, so orangutan has only single copy. But chimpanzee, human, and gorilla has at least two copies. So duplication should have occurred before, you know, human-gorilla speciation, but after, you know, human orangutan speciation, which was about 14 million years ago. Yeah, probably. Yeah, if the, you know, the rate of synonymous non-synonymous rate is constant, then there are only two synonymous differences. So So if the state is, you know, usually non-synonymous substitution is lower than synonymous. So so in that case, most of them are, you know, might be selected. Okay. So
can I ask just one more question?
Okay.
Between this X number 5 and X number 7 is how many
kilobases? There are big introns in here, so like
okay,
maybe 20 like, kV or so.
Sorry, 20?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there's a recombination.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So this figure illustrates what's going on. So gene duplication occurred here, and the divergence goes up. So this is a spatial distribution of divergence. So from position 0 to the end of the gene. So now it's flat. And it's just going up. And the divergence going up. Then probably one mutation, good mutation occurs in exon 7. Then divergence, and that this part, you know, only local divergence appeared in this part. So only in exon 7 divergence is going up, but in other regions still concerted evolution is going on. So this should be in early stages for neofunctionalization. So to verify this story, another similar pattern is also seen in human opsin genes. There are green and red opsin genes on X chromosome. And these two duplicate encode opsin, you know, the color, opsin, you know, recognize red and green color. And exon 5 encodes a very important part of the gene. And here there are two important amino acid changes in exon 5, and also a lot of other changes, making the very high peak only in exon 5 and almost identical in intron 4 and intron 5. So two models that concerted evolution and selection in a sequence. Okay, this is a simulation method. So duplicated genes with L nucleotides and the mutation rate per gene, per region per generation, and the conversion event occurs at this rate. Then and you can simulate the divergence between duplicates. So when conversion rate is low, actually zero, then it follows the molecular growth. So the time is on the horizontal axis and divergence is on vertical axis. So here it's just going up. So divergence and the relationship is almost linear when conversion rate is zero. Here conversion rate is 1 and times 10 to minus 8. Then it's a bit almost similar to the case of conversion molecular clock, but the next one you see some difference. So the model assumes that conversion and mutation occurs unless this divergence hits 10%. If divergence is more than 10%, then no conversion is allowed. So conversion is kind of a recombination process. They should make pairing in meiosis. So pairing needs homology. So I set that criteria at 10% here. So once it hits 10%, then it goes up linearly. But the time to the first hit depends on the conversion rate. So
the colors are just different runs.
Yeah, that's right. first they fluctuate around an equilibrium value. Then, but by chance it could jump up to 10%, then they escape from conversion. So this is only simulating gene conversion and point mutation. But another mechanism be like a big change. A single mutation changes the DNA structure, that, like transposon insertion. That automatically stops the conversion event. So okay, in the next slide, I will show that case. Here, the conversion rate is 10 to minus 7. So it could, concerted evolution continues almost forever.
Excuse me? Mm-hmm. If you say divergence here, you mean fixed changes in the two, in the... Because you also said
it's kind of average. Okay, let's...
Because you also said that conversion would increase the polarity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
So there are two effects. I mean, the
yeah, but the pairing occurs only a single copy of, you know, single copy. So the important thing is they.
Oh, that they too are
yeah,
too far apart.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Switching is like a process.
Hmm?
Switching from less than 10%.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I believe so. So the waiting time for the exponential distribution.
If the conversion rate is that per nucleotide?
Oh, per nucleotide. So then, I said conversion rate is pretty high here. Then occasionally transposon-like mutation occurs. So here, it's still fluctuating. Then an arrow comes in. That means a here. Then it automatically terminates the concerted evolution. Then divergence goes up. Here, thank you. Okay, then the last slide shows the pattern when there is a selection. So the top figure shows a spatial distribution of the divergence. Then it's under concerted evolution. Then good mutation occurs at the center, this position. Then it makes a peak of divergence around here. So this blue shows the divergence around this region, but it's a little bit higher than the other region presented by green line. So this pattern, you know, with the peak around the selected site continues quite long time. Then here transposon comes in and concerted evolution is terminated. So looks like conversion rate is high and selection is strong. Then you can see this is the peak of divergence in around the selected site quite a long time. So that means if you scan the genome, there might be some that kind of signature for selection in many genes. Okay, in summary, I demonstrated how comparative genomics works in evolutionary studies. And I estimate molecular clock for free gene duplication rate and also genome-wide evidence for concerted evolution in yeast. Okay, and in the theoretical part, I showed some theories for analyzing DNA polymorphism data in duplicated genes. And also, selection is incorporated in the model. Thank you very much.